Started. Okay, good morning. And this is Henry Harris, and welcome to another edition of the weekly Emunah Teleforum. Today is Thursday, August 8th. I'm very excited about today's topic. We're going to be speaking about uncomfortable feelings and the way in which we run from them and how that relates to the opportunity of Tisha B'Av. So here we go. We're going to start with just a review and a recap of what is this call? What is the goal of this conversation? This is a conversation that is a mitzvah conversation. It is a pursuit of understanding, which is a commandment of the Torah to know the truth about the world that God created and how he runs his world. That is the mitzvah of Emunah. It's also the mitzvah of not believing in gods other than God. These are what we call constant commandments. We have a continuous opportunity to turn our attention to the truth. And as I like to say, I am so grateful to be aware of the shifting of direction from the job of seeking feelings toward the job of seeking the truth. I've tried very hard for a long time to seek certain feelings and avoid certain feelings, and I wasn't very good at it. I didn't seem to, you know, I was often unsuccessful. The truth is I was never really successful, though it looked and felt at times I was successful. But the truth is I wasn't really successful ever because I'm not capable. None of us are capable of creating the right feelings inside our heart or avoiding the wrong feelings inside our heart. We are living in a world which moment to moment to moment is being created anew through divine energy. All there is divine energy. That's all there is. We say, Ein od milvado, there is nothing other than his. Now, alongside that fascinating and profound teaching of Ein od milvado is this miraculous and mysterious gift called free will. Right? I mean, how does that work? You know, all there is the creator of the universe. All there is the infinite being, the divine energy behind all existence. And yet, somehow there's this corner of the universe called me that has the capacity to make choices as a perceived independent being. But yet, that's what our Torah teaches us, and that's what our experience shows us. I feel myself to have the capacity to make choices. That doesn't mean I feel myself capable of making as having control. Like I can navigate in any manner I want. But in the context of a world that is being created, I do experience having choice. And what is the nature of that choice? The nature of that choice is the opportunity to acknowledge the truth of everything, including my psychological experience. That's what's going on, is that I'm having a flow of divine energy that's showing up in my consciousness. In the same way that everything is being created, my psychological experience is not different. The physical weather of the universe is being created moment to moment through divine energy. And so too is the internal weather of my psychological experience being created moment to moment through the gift of divine energy. Now, the fascinating thing is that I can watch that. I can notice that. I can be on the receiving end of that divine energy in how it shapes my psychological experience. And I can notice that. I can know the truth about that. And that's what I understand to mean when our sages say that everything is in the hands of heaven except the choice to acknowledge heaven. Hakol b'yidei shamayim chutz mi'ira shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except our capacity to know, to have awareness of heaven. So here I am. I'm experiencing a psychological state of mind and feeling what I'm feeling, and then I'm potentially judging and concerned and frightened by that feeling. But I can still acknowledge, okay, wait, one second. What do I know about this feeling state? What do I know about this weather, this internal weather? Oh, it's divine. It's coming from a divine source. The Almighty told me he's going to do that. It's human. It's so deeply purposeful and meaningful that I am on the receiving end of that divine energy, that it shows up in a variety of ways, whether it be insecure or warm and peaceful. It's all by design. It's all universal. It's all human. It's all so dignified and beloved. And it, of course, represents an extraordinary underlying foundation of our job in this world, is to tell the truth, to see the truth, to acknowledge the truth, to walk with the truth that there is one single source behind everything. That's our job. Our job is not to be happy to feel happy all the time. Certainly we have instructions as to wisdom principles that support happiness. You know, focus on what you have. Ezu Ashir Samech Bechelko. Who's the wealthy one? The one who focuses attention on what he has. And that's a worthwhile thing to do. That's wisdom. It doesn't mean, though, that the conscious choice to work at that is like an actual lever to change your feeling state. It's still divine blessing. It's still divine energy that allows for that shift in our feeling state, our sense of wealth, our feeling of privilege and blessing. It's still the case that that's in the hands of the Almighty. And of course, if we do so with a certain humility and sincerity, we have every reason to expect it will change our state of mind. But it's not the lever. It's not that we have power in our hands. And that's just so powerful to me, you know, how that works. So again, this is a mitzvah conversation. The pursuit of this understanding is inherently a mitzvah. It is a reviewing of the truth and a revisiting of the truth about God's world. The way in which that affects us, the way in which it illuminates us with an internal clarity about that, obviously, to the degree that a person sees this understanding insightfully, to the degree that a person has what I would call a das experience, like an inner knowing, that's a life-changing gift that we all are seeking, we all desire, we want it. On the other hand, we don't, the same way, you know, let's just remember the description of how this understanding works includes the fact that we're not in control of the way in which this becomes visible to us from the inside out, right? We're simply describing what's true. And we trust, we have tremendous trust that that insofar as we're seeking the truth, we are looking to live with and align ourselves with this truth, that there's something deep and simple inside our nature that is so suited to this simple truth. Our nature is, our whole being is oriented toward this simple truth. The Almighty created us and continuously creates us in line with this simple truth. So of course, our efforts to seek this truth and align with this truth are going to make a difference. There's no question it will. And of course, there's a humbling experience in recognizing I'm not in control. I'm not, just because I can give over this description with great intellectual clarity, just because I can describe the inside-out nature of my psychological experience, it doesn't give me any greater leverage over controlling my internal experience, right? I'm just describing the truth about how my internal experience works. As I said, it's a mitzvah to do that inherently, and it gives me the possibility of settling down, of accepting that truth, and accepting the value of my experience as a doorway to the truth, independent of how that experience feels. So that's just reframing the goal of this conversation, and I look forward to. I'd love to share now. I'm looking forward to sharing now how. So we're talking, today's topic is about the power. Not the power. Sorry, I just got distracted. We're talking about the human tendency to run away from feelings or to avoid certain uncomfortable feelings, and how that ties into the opportunity of Tisha B'Av. Okay, so I saw a very humorous clip recently from a comedian who's clean and funny. His name is Jim Gaffigan. And he was talking about his noticing his own tendency to eat. He eats a lot. And he was joking about how the fact that he eats a lot for, you know, like there's something of value in eating a lot for him. And in part, it allows him, he says, not to have to feel his feelings, right? It's either I continue eating or I feel my feelings. And he's acknowledging that there's certain feelings that he doesn't want to feel. And the truth is, the moment he said that, it kind of struck me of how true that is. Like, all the ways in which we engage in various unhelpful habits and activities as a distraction from feeling some feelings that we don't like. And how does that work, right? I mean, every person who I'm talking to about this understanding, it comes down to kind of this basic universal phenomenon that we get a hit of feeling we don't like, right? We feel a feeling that we don't like. We get a surge of feeling that we feel discomforted by. Well, there's the discomfort of the feeling, but then there's an added layer to that, which is, wait, this uncomfortable feeling signifies something. It signifies a weakness. It signifies something, something blameworthy, something to be ashamed of, right? So there's the discomfort of the feeling. But even more significant than that is that it's like the feeling, the very presence of the feeling is like a condemnation. We spoke last week about the spirit of accusation that we live in, that the whole phenomenon of this exile is that we're living in the exile of Rome. We're living in the exile of Esav. Esav is the being who attaches value to that which is complete and self-sufficient. Esav is literally from the language asui, made. He was born with fully developed teeth and hair and muscles, and he represents the power of self-made and self-sufficient and independent without need. What Esav and the power of the world that of this society we live in is that what is honorable, that which does not need things. And what is dishonorable, what's something to be ashamed of, is having needs. That's the spirit of accusation that we live in this world. So a feeling of discomfort, a feeling of insecurity, a feeling of fear shows up in our hearts, and we get rattled, right? We get the feeling itself. But then there's underlying that feeling is the perception, like this kind of underlying feeling and spirit of accusation. Whoa, that's a problem. Right, that you feel something unpleasant, that you feel insecure, weak, confused, uncertain, jealous, angry, depressed, sad, whatever the feeling is that you don't like, that we don't like, there's a judgment that comes along with it, and it's unpleasant. We don't want to be in the presence of that feeling because of its capacity to serve as evidence of failure. The very presence of that feeling serves as evidence of our inadequacy. So of course there's a human dimension that says, whoa, let's not go there, you know, like who wants to hang out with the evidence of inadequacy? I don't want to. So that's, you know, what I heard in Jim Gaffigan's line, like it's either, you know, stop eating, it's either keep eating or stop eating and then feel my feelings. That's what's going on, is that we get these surges of feelings. We don't like them. We don't want to be with them. We need to run away from them through some kind of a habit or something to distract us. Or we need to fight them, you know, and to do battle with them. Now, of course, innocently, all that does is it attaches energy and attention to those very feelings, right? The presence of those feelings becomes sticky. The attention to them, what's the attention? The attention is the judgment that says this is bad. This is a problem to have this feeling. That very act of judging the feeling, the misunderstanding that underlies that judgment, is a form of oxygen. It's a form of attention that attaches value, significance, to the presence of that feeling. Whoa, this feeling is real, like it's significant in its capacity to mean something. It's evidence of my inadequacy. And then lo and behold, that attention, that energy, that oxygen has the capacity to hold it in place. It's, you know, what otherwise would have been a simple flow of energy that kind of comes and goes becomes something sticky. And this is our misunderstanding. This is what people are suffering from. this misunderstanding about the nature of this, what's the meaning behind our unpleasant feelings? The meaning behind them is either one of two things. The meaning behind the unpleasant feeling is either evidence of inadequacy, it's personal, or it's something universal, it's something divine. Its origin is in divine energy. It's not particular to me. It's part of the creation. It's part of the way the Almighty created every single human being, and He promised us and told us in advance that we would encounter that spirit of that surge of insecure feeling. He told us that He's going to have that feeling show up in our hearts. And the question is, as I like to say all the time, "V'avta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol avavcha," serve the Almighty with both your hearts. There will be a flow through your circulation, your conscious circulation, your consciousness, that is of a variety of natures. There will be two distinct flows. Know about that and serve me, says Hashem, with both. So what does this have to do with Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av is the whole nature of this flow of insecure energy, that aspect of insecure, of that divine energy, is that it represents a partial worldview. You know, it represents a somewhat limited and constricted worldview, the worldview that suggests you're alone, there's something wrong with you, there's something wrong with your connection to people, to God, to whatever, your childhood, your past, your present, your marriage, your children, there's something about that insecure worldview which by its nature represents limited perspective. It represents limited perception. It's an unreliable and constricted it's just not reliable. So the whole essence of that feeling, of that yucky feeling that we kind of gets frightened by and want to run away from, it's pointing to the phenomenon of a limited worldview that we human beings become subject to. That's part of our human experience. Well, guess what? What is Tisha B'Av except the acknowledgement that human beings can stand in a limited worldview and not understand that they're standing in a limited worldview? That's what happened on Tisha B'Av, is that the Jewish people encountered a report about the nature of Israel being a death trap. The information that was presented in a certain level had some truth to it, but it was the understanding associated with that information that was the problem, and the Jewish people didn't see that they were standing in a limited worldview as they were standing in a limited worldview. And that's why, by the way, that one of the great indicators of Tisha B'Av is machlokus, is the notion of dispute, of conflict, of baseless hatred. Because what is machlokus? The root of the word machlokus is chelek. Chelek means part. Part as in partial, right? I love the analogy that's given. I don't know where it's from some non-Jewish metaphor from ancient, whatever. But the metaphor is simple and true. It's the metaphor of four blind men coming upon an elephant. And one grabs the trunk and declares, "Hey, I found a hose." And the other one grabs the tail and says, "What are you talking about? I found the whip." And the other one grabs is patting the side of the elephant and saying, "You guys are both crazy. It's a wall." And the last one grabs the leg and says, "What?" On and on. Right now, each of them is seeing something. They're seeing, they're feeling, and they're perceiving a perception. They're having a perception, but the limited nature of their perception is not known to them in the moment that they're having their perception. So the nature of machlokus is that you're standing in a limited worldview and don't realize you're standing in a limited worldview. That's the same thing that's going on with the yucky feeling, right? Jim Gaffigan, who's like, either I continue eating or I stop and I stand in the presence of, or I have to feel my feelings. I don't like feeling my feelings because those yucky feelings are evidence of my inadequacy. They describe a clear picture, an authentic and true picture of there being something really wrong with me, because otherwise, why would I have this insecure feeling? Why would I have this sad, despairing, confused, uncertain feeling? It must be that there's something truly true about it, right? That's the nature of this test, of this challenge, is to stand, again, to stand in a partial worldview and know that you're standing in a partial worldview. When you know, when you don't know, when you're standing in a partial worldview and you don't know that, then the experience of the partial worldview feels so, it just feels so condemning, so painful, so compelling, real, and overwhelmingly accusatory. And when you're standing in a partial worldview and feeling the yucky feeling, which is what is associated, well, that's the same thing. A yucky feeling is by nature a standing in a partial worldview, but you see and you have a clarity about the fact that it's a partial worldview, then you can still feel it, but you can acknowledge a bigger truth and you can stand there. You can stand there and let it be. And the opportunity of Tisha B'Av is to see the truth about what's really missing in this world. I'm standing in a yucky feeling, and it seems to me the truth is I'm inadequate. I had a messed up childhood. I have a horrible character that I don't know where, when, and how is ever going to get better, right? That's one way to go with my yucky feeling. Another way to go is I'm in this horrible feeling, and I acknowledge that what's missing is a depth of understanding, a broadness of understanding that's divine. I don't have the power to banish the yucky feeling, but I can know what's behind the yucky feeling. And that's why on Tisha B'Av, our sages tell us that Mashiach will be born. I don't know if that means that it means exclusively that the actual person who becomes Mashiach will be born, or if in addition to that it means that that day has the possibility of seeing something so deep about the truth of partial worldviews that the opportunity of Tisha B'Av is such a gift these days. Tisha B'Av is such an opportunity. If you and I suffer these yucky feelings, and we suffer the tendency to want to battle, run, hide, avoid those feelings and all the problems that kind of come out of that innocent misunderstanding. If we suffer the mistake, the confusion about partial worldviews, then Tisha B'Av represents this amazing opportunity to stand in a partial worldview, to feel the pain of our gullus. What is gullus? Gullus is a lack of a full revelation. It's a gullus is an ongoing constricted perception of the truth. We're living in this exile of Rome that represents this corrupted perspective of what's true, that self-sufficiency and no needs, that's what's worthy of honor. Right? That's so corrupted. It's so constricted. But here we are. We're coming to this day where the opportunity to stand in the pain of that yucky feeling and know the truth about it. The only thing I'm really mourning is the lack of God's revelation in my life. That's it. That's the only thing that's ever missing is the lack of God's revealing new understanding, new divine energy. The feelings themselves are safe. Not only are they safe, these yucky feelings, not only are they safe, they point me toward Mashiach. That's what Tisha B'Av is teaching me, that these painful feelings, it is, we don't want to distract ourselves from the pain of from the real pain. There's one true pain in this world. That's it. It's not the pain of my childhood. I'm not, God forbid, suggesting that there aren't I want to be clear. I don't mean to express a message that suggests a lack of empathy. I don't mean to do that at all. People have experienced wrongs, and there's such a thing as inappropriate and damaging behavior, and people can suffer from those experiences. But ultimately, our stepping forward, our path forward, is to understand how the real pain that we're suffering, the real, none of those events truly have capacity to shape my psychological experience. None of them. Even the horrific experiences of Jewish history inherently don't have the capacity to shape psychological damage. There's pain and there's suffering, but they're all that pain is pointing to the truth that we're living in a world in which partial worldviews are human. And we need help, divine. We're not the author of our partial worldview. It's not an indication of our inadequacy that we live in partial worldview. It's divine in its origin, and we look toward the divine for first of all, we acknowledge the truth about the partial worldview, and then we look to the truth that there's only one way out of the partial worldview, and that's divine blessing. So we let go of like all the distractions and all the illusory pain. This circumstance is the pain, the source of my pain. This thing is the source of my pain. No, there's only one pain. There's only one real pain in this world. That's what these 3 weeks and the Tisha B'Av day is about. Is that we let ourselves feel that pain. That pain is worthy of feeling because it's liberating. It relieves us of the illusion that there's something actually inadequate about us. No, it's divine. The decree to the pain and suffering, all the inadequacy that we're feeling, it's just the human getting, it's just the fact that we flow with the insecure feelings. We flow with perceptions that are not, that are constricted. That's all coming from there. It's all divine. It's not personal. We can stand in that pain because that pain brings us closer to the truth. Okay, I spoke a long time, and I'm going to pause here because I don't have more to say that I think is going to be helpful. And I am now opening the floor. I welcome your input, your comments, your questions, please. What can you tell me?
Hi, Rabbi Harris?
Yes.
Hi, this is Sonia. Thank you so much. First of all, this is so helpful. I just wanted to see if I understood correctly because, interestingly enough, I've been having a lot of those, you know, yucky feelings and difficult emotions lately. And as I reflect back, I often have thoughts such as, oh my gosh, how could I even think that? This is so shameful. Like, why, like, you know, and even if I act out of that state, also like a lot of shame. And do you say what you just said is basically that's already the kind of the blame, the ASAP mentality of I should be complete. I should not have those, you know, feelings and emotions, and it's somehow a reflection about me. And even like to give a specific example, because when you said we're living in a sort of a time of ASAP, and I was thinking, well, how does it manifest in our day-to-day life? And then I just realized, for example, let's say you go to all these parenting, you know, classes and lectures, right? And they all teach you about how to be a better parent. And they all imply sort of very subtly, even though they'll say here and there, well, of course, everyone can stumble and we're all human, but really what they mean is if you try really hard, you'll master this and you'll get a hang of it and you'll be a better parent. And is that an example of this ace of mentality, meaning you can be a perfect parent if you just try hard enough? Like you won't really mess up, you'll master this. Or in other places, like you'll be a perfectly organized person, or you'll be very good with X, Y, and Z, you know, you'll never have a mess in your house, et cetera, et cetera. All these ideas of how we go to all these workshops and conferences and this and that, and they all imply, or even like, I don't know, like self-help, like psychological well-being places where they kind of seem to imply, if you only do this and this and this, you'll be fine. You'll be so much better off than you're now.
Uh-huh.
Is that kind of what you're saying?
I think so. I mean, I want to say as follows. If I understood your question, you're putting forward the idea that to the extent that any kind of anybody imparts a message, if you just try hard enough, you'll be able to, you know, to overcome X obstacle or become proficient in Y skill. Is that in some way part of a, you know, this self-made ASOV mentality? I think that I don't, you know, I think that it's easy to take that. I don't know what they're saying. So, you know, whatever.
Right, right.
Know. But at the same time, I know that me listening, I have a tendency to kind of map that message onto anything I'm hearing, because I kind of show up with my own spirit of accusation and lay it onto anything that's happening around me, right? I've got my own, I'm like self, what's the word? I come fully equipped with a spirit of accusation that, you know, shows up and plays itself out in my perception all the time. And I will definitely say that it makes sense to me. I mean, Jewish wisdom says that that if you don't look to the Almighty as your partner in anything, then you're mistaken, and you're just set up for, like, that's just a mistaken approach to anything, you know, like whether it's parenting, whether it's happiness, whether it's you know, losing weight or exercising self-control in any area of your life. It's certainly the spirit of Esav that says, get it together and get it done. You know, like Nike, just do it. You know, willpower, get going, lift yourself up by your own bootstraps. There's no question that that is a spirit of, that message is kind of part of the worldview that we live in, and there's an inclination inside of us that is kind of drawn in that direction. There's a certain kind of spirit of self-sufficiency and arrogance associated with that. So yeah, it's there. It's subtle. And, you know, I just want to say that let's contrast Esav with the Jewish worldview. The Esav worldview is needs are evidence of inadequacy. Lacking is evidence of inadequacy. The Jewish worldview is that needs are literally the divine design, that your needs are built into the creation because they're designed to point you to the source. There's this beautiful circuit. The Almighty supplies us with our energy. We receive that energy, and we then acknowledge Him as the source of our energy as a way of completing this beautiful circuit. Like the whole point of having a need is to thereby cause us to turn to and to acknowledge our need for the divine in our lives, and that consciousness is our way of closing the circuit. So and there's no way to do that without having needs, literally. So it's, as I've shared in the past, you know, when Adam was born and there was no food, it says, yeah, because, you know, there was no food, so that he should turn to the Almighty and say, hey, I could use some food. That was built into the creation. And Esav is absolutely against that, absolutely condemning that whole premise.
So basically anything that happens that we experience as a lack, as a yucky, unpleasant, insecure, this is not how it should be, you know, anything, it's really not an accusation against us. Why are you feeling that way? Why is it happening to you? You did something wrong to deserve it. You know, your own fault, like you weren't looking where you were walking, so you tripped and fell, etc. Rather, it's more of a like a kind of a nudge, like a gentle nudge to look back to, oh, right, I need help. I need to ask for help. Yeah. It's almost like, otherwise, like sometimes I think, like, why can't we just be comfortable? Why can't we just have everything we need? Why can't we have a little bit of just peace and quiet and just, like, not even asking much? Like, you know, just, like, you know, peaceful, not too exciting, you know, would be good. And then, but you know how they say, even Yaakov Avinu, like, look at his life. Like, there was one travail after another, and they say, like, why? He was such a perfect being. He was, you know, the epitome of perfection, like even his name, you know, and they say, well, that's because nobody in this world can get too comfortable, because that's how they get back to Hashem, is when they're reminded that they're lacking. Is that right?
100%. 100%. And you and I can live, we can trust that experience of lacking and the insecure feelings that are evidence of our lack. It's true. The insecure experience, insecure feelings are evidence of our lacking, meaning our lacking a complete worldview. I don't have the capacity to just generate a complete worldview. I need the Almighty to show me what there is to be seen in this world. I need that. I need Him. I cannot do it without Him. And that is in no way a sign of, you know, inadequacy. I mean, our greatest women and men of our history stood in that consciousness with tremendous peacefulness, right? They were, their strength was in their capacity to acknowledge their need, you know, and that's, you know, it's kind of a general idea, is that like powerful people create powerful relationships, you know. They acknowledge their incompleteness, and they allow that to form powerful relationships. Well, guess what? The best relationship you could form, if you're looking to, you know, form a powerful relationship, is with the Almighty. A really powerful person, meaning a person who's truly in touch with what's real and wise, knows that he's lacking, and he won't allow that lack to inhibit him from going about his, you know, purpose in this world. He'll use it to clue in, oh, I need partnerships. Your best partner is God.
That's pretty good news. given that He's Almighty, right?
And yeah. And that He set it up to be the part, right? Like it's just like He keeps knocking on our door. Every insecure feeling is like a little knock on the door. Come look.
Come to me.
Oh. Acknowledge me. Recognize me, know I'm the truth, whatever. You know, it's just every one of those things is a knock on the door. And, yeah, it's uncomfortable. I'm not saying that there won't be discomfort. I don't know how to insulate myself from ever experiencing the pain of insecure feelings, but there's a big difference, as we've discussed many times. There's a big difference between the pain of an insecure feeling and then the suffering that comes from the misunderstanding about that feeling, right, is a very, very big difference. There's pains in this world. There are pains of living human experience. But the suffering that comes from misunderstanding the pain, that we can learn something about it. We can gain insight about that. We can, you know, seek that truth that keeps us, you know, but that's what's going on, is that a guy gets a shot of energy that feels insecure, and he gets lost, and then starts to kind of, you know, churl away at, why am I having this feeling? Let's go eat something. You know, why am I having this feeling? Let's go whatever. Even, you know, fighting. They're habitual. There are people who have habitual conflict because it's like, I think I shared with you this John Sarno. You should really take a look at the ABC News 2020 special on Dr. John Sarno, who built this beautiful industry helping people with intense chronic back and neck pain, that he basically was able, he's a medical doctor, and what would he do with people? They would have 10, 15 years of chronic pain that was debilitating pain. He would meet with them. He'd rule out actual disease. He'd rule out actual serious injury. And then he'd say to them, you have no physiological basis for your chronic pain. Nothing. There's nothing in your body that is actually the basis of your pain. So they'd say, what in the world is then, where's my pain coming from? And he would say, it's your unwillingness to look at some real pain, real emotional pain in your life, that you're unconsciously directing your body to cause pain in your back or your neck, because it allows you to distract yourself from the real pain that you feel ashamed of. There is a pain in your life that you don't want to look at. It feels so threatening to you because it's whatever, for whatever reason. So you're unconsciously, your body is listening to this unconscious desire to distract itself from the emotional pain. And it sets up a process whereby you feel debilitating back and neck pain. It's crazy. It's wild. And guess what? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, without any sophisticated, serious, you know, therapy over years, they moved on from their intense and debilitating back and neck pain. Yeah, you Google the Dr. John Sarno ABC 2020 News, whatever, you'll see it's like a 13-minute special about how simple, how powerful and simple it is to rule out the mistaken understanding of what's wrong with us and thereby open ourselves to this simple truth. Like they just ruling out the falsehood, they aligned with the simple truth that their pain is not a problem. It's divine. It's healthy. And their lives changed. That's what we're doing. We're ruling out. Tisha B'Av is a day where God said to the Jewish people, you guys cried a baseless cry. You thought your suffering was coming from the presence of giants in the land, the presence of burials in the land. No, your pain is coming from your misunderstanding about how I run the world. And that's a problem that you misunderstand that. So I'm going to teach you over the course of history what's really worth crying about. What's worth crying about is that you lack divine revelation. That's the only thing. It's the only thing worth crying about. Look over there. Look to the real source of your pain. That's a healing process.
This is also... when I get into it and I want to explore it, I'm tempted to lean into it and explore it, and it's just a ride, and I want to fix it, and as if I have the capability of seeing everything, but really I'm just this blind man with the elephant, just seeing. But then I realize, oh, I forgot, Hashem knows, Hashem can make it whole for me. I don't see what Hashem sees. I don't see anything. I'm blind. This feeling is, for whatever reason, nothing wrong with that at all. But,
I don't know if it's your phone or mine, but there's some kind of a weird squeaking noise that's showing up as you speak. Do you know what that might be?
Hold on.
No, it's still showing up. That's so strange because I muted everybody else, and you've spoken many times, and it's never happened.
Is this any better?
So far, so good.
So far, so good. Okay. Should I start over, or you understand?
No. I heard you. I heard you. Weird, accompanying noise.
Oh, okay. And then I want to share. So this is like a quick true story, but I see there's like it's. I see it as a mushroom. But basically, someone I know, their law firm dissolved, and they're looking to be hired as a lawyer. And they feel really insecure because they're like, I don't have such great experience from my past law firm. Who's going to hire me? Like, I'm not the best lawyer that people are trying to look for. No one's going to want to hire me. And then they said, wait a second. I had this one client who was like, he gave me so much business, and he likes me, and if I bring this client with me, every law firm is going to want to hire me because this client is so lucrative and he loves working with me, thank God. So it made me think that we're like this insecure lawyer. We feel like, oh my gosh, like I'm so insecure, like on my own I can't do it. But then when we partner with Hashem, we realize I have this big client backing me up, everyone's going to want to take me.
Beautiful. Oh, that's beautiful. Very
thank
nice.
Thank you. So at the same time, it's like, also not to take credit for things because it's the big client giving it to you. It's not you, but you don't have to be afraid of anything because the big client, yes, you're insecure. That's the reality. That's how it is. But I have my big client, so everything's fine.
Yes. Yes. 100%. You know, what I'm coming to appreciate as I see this for myself and I'm encountering it with people in my life that I care about, that are, whether it's my struggle or one of their struggles, the truth is that we're really not self-sufficient. That's the essence. The essence of it all is that we're not self-sufficient. We are not in control of our capacity to navigate our life. Now, there are places in our life where we are navigating, right? There are places in our life where we're functioning nicely. And the challenge there is gratitude. The challenge there is to acknowledge and notice the degree to which, despite our lack of control, we are navigating beautifully and gracefully, to see the gratitude there. And then the flip side of that, but it's one coin, is where we are not navigating, to acknowledge the underlying truth behind that. Not that we are exempt from making an effort, but underlying all effort in Jewish consciousness is the clarity that it's not my effort that drives the process. I'm responsible to make effort, but it's not the effort. And so we're basically, in every area of our life, not in control. And either we're in gratitude for our ability to navigate, or we're in acceptance for where we're not able to navigate. But it's the same truth.
You know, Rabbi Harris, I'm going to be starting a school year in September as a teacher, and it just dawned on me that, like, these truths can totally be applied in the realm of education, just like they can be applied in the realm of sports. Like, just approaching it with a state of humility. Like, actually recently came across that in Mishlei, it says that arrogance basically comes before failure. And I was thinking about it. I see it as, like, if a person is so impacted by how others are going to view them, or even their own judgmental thoughts, then that will lead to failure, because they're not going to persevere. They're just going to give up because they're embarrassed by how others view them, or they have, like, high expectations of themselves. But if a person, you know, approaches something with humility, then it's not relevant whether they're successful or not. They're trying, and they realize the pressure I'm working through them, and they're doing the best they can. And if it takes some time, but they're not kind of like so, like, they have a life approach to it. It's not like my life depends on it because I'm so, I'm like, God forbid, like, I don't catch up with the rest of the class or something like that. It's a different mentality.
Yes.
And I know, like, I work with coworkers, and they have certain techniques or certain policies. Like, for example, if a kid gets something easily, they have a rule. You can't say that's easy, because if what comes easy to one kid doesn't come easy to another kid, and the second kid is going to feel a bad feeling, because the first kid's like, oh, that was easy, that was so easy, and the second kid's going to be like, oh, but I'm still struggling, and it's not empathetic to the second kid, which I get that. But I think that you should say Baruch Hashem if you get it. Like, thank God, it came easily. That's a gift. Like, thank God. And I feel like that part is negated.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
So I think just approaching it like humbly. I know, like, some different ages, kids are more attuned to how others, like, look at them, and it's funny, it takes them more time and things like that. But, okay, I'll pray to Hashem.
Beautiful.
I hope that somehow this can get through them.
I want to encourage you to, I think you do this already, but I encourage you to keep a journal of some kind where you see in your teaching experience, you know, where and how this understanding shows up. You know, just what you see and what you see in the kids that you're working with, where you see in your own experience in navigating a classroom. You know, there's something I think that will be valuable from your observations and your insights.
Mission accepted. I would love to do that. Absolutely.
You know, you'll see if it feels clunky and like a big effort. So, you know, don't sweat it. But I think there's a real
opportunity there. Yeah, absolutely. Just kind of having like a lightness. This whole approach gives me such a lightness to it.
That's good
which
news.
I think is like so needed.
That is good news. That is a gift that you're seeing something true about the divine service. You know, that like the Dubna Magid, you know, he describes that, he says that the bundle of Jewish service is light. And if it feels heavy, it's a sign that you might be carrying the wrong bundle. So it's normal to feel that we're carrying a bundle that's heavy. And that's just a cue to be remembering, I'm grabbing the wrong bundle. Well, if you're feeling light, then that's a good sign. You know, that's a sign that you're experiencing the authentic Torah bundle.
Baruch Hashem, is it because the ego is what weighs down, and like the lack of ego kind of lets you fly up?
It makes sense to me. You know, when it looks like I'm when it looks like I'm the guy, then it feels hard. You know, It just really feels like I've got all my calculations and all my all my stipulations and all my contingencies that might or might not go. You know, it feels intuitively impossible, and that's true. When it looks like it's me, it feels intuitively impossible, and that is a real intuition when it's inside the logic of I'm the guy.
Yeah, if you go into Hebrew, like kavod, honor, it's like kaved, like heavy.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
I wonder if there's also one with light. I don't know. But I don't know if you've heard the quote, like angels fly because they take themselves lightly.
Interesting. I'm sure there's something to that.
But Baruch Hashem, and just one thing I'm struck by is, you know, like, I love having these conversations, and it's just so funny how this is such a simple understanding, but I forget it. Like, I would think, like, I would maybe it would, like, stay with me, but I forget, just like I become hungry every day, you know, like,
yes.
and just like someone who is well-versed in eating, let's say they've lived 100 years and they eat all that they've had 100 years worth of eating, they still become hungry when they're 100 years old. Like,
yes.
You would think, hey, you've been eating for 100 years. Maybe, I don't know, like, they still get hungry the same way, like, a baby would get hungry, or a five-year-old would get hungry, or a 30-year-old would get hungry. Like, it makes no difference how long you've been living and
beautiful
understanding the process. But maybe a 100-year-old could say, like, oh, I get it, I'm hungry, that's why. So maybe I could be more adept at understanding what I'm, like, understanding what it is once I remember, but I still forget just like anybody else.
Beautiful. That is the human, it is the human condition to remember and then forget, in the same way that we fill up with food and then we get an empty stomach. It is completely impersonal that we get insight and then we lose insight. We get insight and then we lose insight. We get insight and then we lose insight. And we know something about how that works is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
I realize I've muted everybody. I'm going to unmute you to see if anybody else wants to, if anybody else has a thought or a comment to share in our remaining minutes.
I just want to say how much I'm enjoying the call.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Glad to hear.
Yeah. I think there's also a place when, you know, like if somebody knows they're going to make, you know, $1,000 to lift this box and take it upstairs, it's easier to carry than when you think you don't know why you're doing it. And I think part of the way Hashem created the world is that we don't know why we're doing a lot of things. And that's where Emunah comes in to say, no, we're doing it and we're really going to get something good out of it, whatever that is. But there's a certain blindness that we could lose track of, okay, like how long do I have to feel like this and trust Hashem and say, okay, or go through this situation and it's never, you know, it's years. You know, some people take years to get a divorce. Some people take years till their kid is finally settled. And you know, sometimes the kid has to just graduate school because school itself is what's not working. And you're really stuck in situations for a long time. And it's not about what could I do to get out of it, because the truth is sometimes you can't. You are stuck. This is school. This is the way it is. You know, like I know with my son, like when he finally graduated, it's like a different world. You know what I mean? But we did have to go through the 18 years of however, you know, the ups and the downs. And, you know, I think that I always try to keep, you know, focus on, okay, there's a point. You know, like whatever that point is. And then they say, you know, don't do it for the reward, do it to serve Hashem. We can do all that. But at a certain point when we're tired and we're just like, sometimes Hashem has to give us like a little bit of a knock. I'm really right here. They're real, you know, this isn't random. But I just think that that's also where Emunah comes in, is that we really do a lot of things without really understanding why we're doing it or what we're getting out of it. And that's a big part of Emunah, just trying to keep the focus on there is a point, you know?
Right.
And that
right.
I'm not doing anything wrong if the situation takes 15 years to settle, because it could just be that's the situation. And, it, you know, sometimes it takes you know, a long time for things to really, it's not let me do this mitzvah and let me take this on and tomorrow the whole thing got settled. Could be tomorrow I found the right doctor, but now I have to go through the whole treatment. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we really don't know, you know?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It is part of the challenge and the tests that the Almighty tells us he's sending us to be able to stand in a discomfort and in an unknown about that discomfort, and yet to retain some connection to the truth that it's not in our hands.
And not want to just give up and be like, you know, some people give up, whether they give up on Judaism themselves or they give up on the whole, I'm not even taking care of this thing anymore, I'm done. It's a big effort to really say it's not worth it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
with all the emunah, hopefully we realize it's worth it even when it doesn't feel like it's worth it.
Yeah.
And that we stay, you know, you stay strong and you stay in the game. At least you stay in the game. You might get a little tired of playing like to your best at certain points, but at least you're in the game.
Yes, yes, and that goes back to our original, you know, kind of the main goal I was looking to kind of touch on, is that when we get that discomforting feeling, you know, do we understand, it's a partial worldview, but do we stand in the truth of that acknowledge, do we understand that we're standing in a partial worldview, or do we overlook that and see it as something, you know, descriptive of a real reality? That's the opportunity of these weeks and this day, is to feel the pain. To know that there's only one real pain behind all our pain. It's the degree to which we haven't been revealed the fullness of everything, and we can do that. We can stand in that gullus. We can stand in that pain, and when we know where it's coming from, wow. We turn with sincerity. We turn with a sense of purposefulness, without being discouraged by our pain. We can use the pain as a way to realize, oh, this is drawing my attention. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to pause here. It is absolutely a pleasure to speak with you all, and I wish everybody a meaningful Shabbos and a very meaningful and safe fast. And as always, you're welcome to reach me with comments or questions at henry@jewishwellbeing.org or at 845-393-1529. And